This podcast is intended to support UK healthcare professionals with education. The information provided in this podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice or treatment, and patients are encouraged to consult healthcare providers, including nurses, for any medical questions or concerns.
Welcome to Stoma and Continence Conversations from Coloplast Professional, where healthcare professionals and experts by experience discuss the latest hot topics in the worlds of stoma, continence care and specialist practice. I'm Hannah Patterson. I've worked in specialist care and I'm currently the Ostomy Care Associate Education Manager at Coloplast. Today I am joined by Coloplast Ambassador Fran.
The biggest challenge is the fact that I sweat quite a lot. Getting bags to stick when you're exercising for like 3 or 4 hours constantly can be a little bit of a challenge. I actually went in for my surgery on what would have been the day of the opening ceremony of the Paralympics if it had been when it was supposed to be. So I would have missed it. We get tested by anti-doping and it's kind of convenient in a way, not having to wait to need to pee. Leaks suck and then they ruin your skin. So may as well just prevent before you have a problem.
Hi, Fran. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good, good.
Just a little tired from training.
Yes, now we'll go into that in a minute, though. But Fran, I am so lucky to actually get hold of Fran. Fran is like the jet setter at the moment. Fran is training, but not just training anywhere. Fran is training here, there and everywhere. So I'm going to put the stage over to you here, Fran. So if you could tell us a little bit about yourself. Obviously, the reason why I'm talking to you from Coloplast, and also a little bit about this training, because it's amazing, absolutely amazing.
I'm Fran. I'm a Paralympic cyclist. The reason we're chatting is I have a spinal cord injury and I also have Crohn's, so double whammy of fun there, which means I self-catheterize and I have a ileostomy. So just to make my life entertaining, because it's not challenging enough. And yeah, so all my training is, obviously, it's Paralympic year. So training towards hopefully potentially being selected for the Paralympics. We won't know until July. But yeah, training for paracycling racing at the moment. So yeah, busy, lots of travel, lots of hard work, but it'll all be worth it in the summer, hopefully.
And I know you said there, Fran, double whammy, like life isn't hard enough. But then you do Paralympic cycling as well, just to make your life even more interesting and tricky. And most people with Crohn's struggle to potentially get up in the morning, spinal cord injury, potentially struggle to get up in the morning. And I think I already said to you and we chatted before, I can't even ride a bike. So actually, out of all three things that you do, I think that's the one I actually tip my hat to you the most on, because riding a bike for me, I don't know why. It's one of those things I have never ever been able to do. I was one of those kids that constantly fell off in the gutter. I was one of those ones that constantly had like the blue, you know, the very fancy blue plasters stuck all over your knees and your hands where I'd gone splat up a various curb. It was never a bike ride unless I came off it. I even tried to reteach myself during lockdown and ended up in a hedge. So it's a conclusion for me that cycling is not my thing. So the fact that you are able to do it on such an amazingly competitive level, despite everything else, honestly just blows me away. It really, really does. So looking a bit more at that cycling, well, no, again, we spoke before about catheterization and the stoma. How do you find that when you're competing? What are the sort of challenges that you come across when you're competing?
So with my stoma, the biggest challenge is the fact that I sweat quite a lot. So getting bags to stick when you're exercising for like 3 or 4 hours constantly can be a little bit of a challenge. But having found the right bags, that's not so much of a problem. And the right kind of accessories, like I use a tape around the edges and extra things like that and some decent barrier wipes underneath. But that was the biggest challenge initially, was stopping things leaking just because of sweat. It's not so bad, I find, when I'm training, having to empty my bag constantly, because my ileostomy slows down a bit when I'm exercising. I guess because the blood supply to your gut's reduced when you're working quite hard. So I don't find I have to empty like in a race or anything. I can get through a race distance. If I'm training, then yeah, but that's no different to someone else needing the bathroom, really.
Yeah.
So that's, the stoma isn't it's just a more of a challenge from a hydration and nutrition perspective for fueling and hydrating, because you obviously you sweat and you need to absorb sugar to ride. So I've had to tweak what I eat and drink and be a bit cautious around that. That's probably the biggest challenge. And then catheterizing isn't really an issue. I can always shove some catheters, they're tiny, in like a bar bag or in a pocket. Again, I wouldn't need to go in a race, so it's not really a problem because I catheterize on a schedule. In fact, in some respects, we get tested by anti-doping, and it's kind of convenient in a way, not having to wait to need to pee. You just need to wait to have enough pee that they're satisfied.
You don't have to try and do the pressurized pee.
Exactly, in front of someone as well who's watching. So in some respects, silver linings. So yeah, it's just managing hygiene around that, because obviously if you're in sweaty kit and things, like just being really careful to keep it clean.
Looking at the hygiene side of things, I suppose some areas that you potentially go to aren't potentially as well equipped for hygiene as perhaps we are in the UK or other countries, that you're having to look a bit more basic side of things.
Yeah, it's just being really smart around things like always carrying hand gel and wipes and just sensible little things like that, and like disposable bags. When I'm racing, I don't carry anything on my bike because, like I say, I wouldn't intend having to empty my bag or stop in a race. But if I'm training, I always carry some catheters and I always carry a spare change kit for my bag, even though I rarely, I think maybe two or three times the whole time I've had my stoma, I've had to stop and change in the wild, if you like. I have done it. It was entertaining. But it's useful to carry just as a just in case. I had one recently. I was in Italy last week and I actually crashed in a training ride.
Oh God!
I slid on some cardboard on a wet road and I actually did what I never really thought was going to be possible, which is I got road rash. So, you know, like when you graze your skin.
Yeah.
Right by my stoma bag.
Oh,
like right
word.
On the edge of the plaster. And I was like, okay, that's weird. Got up from the crash. Was all right. It was just road rash. But then realised that that was through four layers of clothing that hadn't ripped, so just friction. But I'd also ripped my bag at that point because it was where the edge of my bag sat. And so I was stood there with two people stopped in a car going, are you okay? Are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. Like, literally, I've just got a graze on my arm. And then looking down and being like, oh, can you all go now? I'm fine, really, because I want some privacy to change my bag. And then it was at that point that I was like, yeah, at that point I was very happy I had a spare and a disposable bag and a Ziploc bag, because then I just literally clicked a new bag on because I used the two-piece, put a piece of tape over the graze, deal with this later, and shoved it in a Ziploc bag in my pocket until I found a bin. So yeah, like the strangest things happen, but yeah, apparently that's a thing.
I know I've told you about when I had a stoma. I remember when I fell off horse riding, because horse riding was my thing. And the first thing I did was lay on the ground, sort of pull my trousers up and check what was going on down the midsection. It was like, no, all intact. Off we go again.
Yeah, I didn't think I'd be able to rip the bag through four layers of clothing, but apparently, yep, you can if the friction's enough.
That's quite impressive. Are you healing now? How's the road rash healing?
Yeah, it's all gone now, so it's fine. Yeah, all filled up. It wasn't that dramatic.
So how long have you had your ileostomy for?
Since 2020, so coming up for 4 years in August.
Okay, and how long have you been self-catheterizing for?
Oh, since 2006, so a long time.
So in that sort of, I mean, I'm looking sort of before, maybe even before catheterization, were you always quite sporty then, or do you feel that be able to have the catheter and the stoma has almost enabled that side of you to come out more?
No, I was always sporty. I grew up different sports. I grew up doing like rock climbing and outdoor sports, and competed a little bit as a kid and just enjoyed being in the outdoors. And then when I had my spinal cord injury in 2006, I went back to paraclimbing and took part in paraclimbing competitions. And then I took up bike riding again. I kind of always rode as a kid and stuff. Like I say, we were outdoorsy, so I had a mountain bike and rode that. But then, yeah, got back to cycling after my spinal cord injury and then got into triathlon. So I did the Tokyo Paralympics for paratriathlon. But it was just before that. Obviously, the Tokyo Paralympics was supposed to be 2020 and got delayed. And I had my stoma in August 2020. I actually went in for my surgery on what would have been the day of the opening ceremony of the Paralympics if it had been when it was supposed to be. So I would have missed it.
That's almost quite... I don't know if you believe that, but there's something sort of strangely fortuitous about that almost, isn't there? Like that was written in your future, that was what you should be doing, the fact that was when you had that surgery.
Yeah, although we could have all done without the COVID delay, being a thing, frankly. But yeah, that having the stoma meant I could then make the delayed games the year later. So I was able to do triathlon at that games. But it then was also why I switched from triathlon to cycling. And I switched from triathlon to cycling after Tokyo because my Crohn's just didn't like running. Whether it's because I've got a stoma, I don't think so, because there are lots of people with stomas who run and run long distances. I mean, look at Adele Roberts, she ran the marathon.
Yeah.
But for me, when I run, because of I think it's more related to my spinal cord injury, because I run with leg braces, my gait is very up and down and jiggly. Like, there's a lot of movement. And I think that basically shakes my guts to the point that they object.
They don't like being jigged around.
Yeah, exactly. So I couldn't really train enough with running to be competitive in triathlon. But cycling doesn't have that same effect because you're just sat in a static position pretty much. So I switched to cycling because it's more sustainable. And I don't really miss the swimming. I like swimming, and swimming with a stoma is no problem, but I don't miss having to get up at 6 a.m. to get in a cold pool.
No, I'm with you on that one. I am not a cold person in the slightest. I like being warm. Yeah. And it's a bit like you. I love swimming. When I'm in the pool, I'm fine. But that whole process of getting in the pool is painful for me.
Yeah, definitely.
And not being a morning person either, early mornings and cold water, no. I want to go back to something else you touched on briefly earlier. You spoke a bit about hydration. I spoke to another one of our ambassadors, Gail, a while ago. It's another one of our podcasts that's available on Catch Up. Gail is another insane person like yourself, Fran, that does things that she shouldn't be able to. Gail runs marathons as a hobby. Absolutely bonkers. And she has run marathons all over the world. And she had an issue where she was unable to run the New York Marathon because they wouldn't let her take her hydration pack with her and also her stoma supplies with her. That was shocking to me to hear that, you know, people are struggling just with the basic need like hydration. For people with stomas, it's such an essential need. I mean, have you ever come across any issues? I know you spoke about doping and things like that, where you've had issues either with your medication causing problems with things or where you've had barriers when it comes to trying to get that correct hydration.
No, with respect to anti-doping, they're really good. Like, they're set up for para athletes, so they understand people who have a catheter. You can get, like, you can check all your medications, and if you have to take a medication that is technically banned, you can apply for a therapeutic use exemption. None of my Crohn's medications come under that. So I haven't needed one, but you can. So it isn't restrictive for somebody who, for a genuine medical reason, needs a medication that there's no alternative for. So they're actually set up really well.
I'm just thinking with medication, I know that when I was in flare-ups, you often have to get put on steroids and things like that. And I can imagine steroids are a big...
Yeah, so steroids is something you would have to get a TUE for. Now, I've not been in a flare, so I've not really had that problem. But there is the scope to have it, do it, and do it within the UK anti-doping and world anti-doping rules. So it's not restrictive to people who genuinely need the use of medications. It's quite well set up. And the anti-doping process, like, no one's ever had a problem with me using a catheter. You just explain it, they put it on the form. So they're quite accommodating. Like, in fairness, I have nothing bad to say about that process.
Fantastic.
From the point of view of hydration, I'm lucky in the sense that in a time trial, so my focused event is the time trial on the road, so which lasts approximately 30 minutes max. So I wouldn't eat or drink during it. I drink before and drink after, so I don't have to carry things. But then I also do the road race, which is anything up to like 70, 80 kilometers. So that is like 2-3 hours. So I do have to carry hydration. And within the paracycling rules, I'm allowed to wear a hydration pack. I wear it under my skin suit rather than over the top. Or I could have drink bottles with straws. The only reason I don't use a normal drink bottle like a regular cyclist would use is because I can't, with my hand function, because I am incomplete tetraplegic. I actually injured my neck in my spinal cord injury. I can't, my hands aren't quite strong enough to grab a bottle and drink from it reliably, yeah, whilst also steering the bike in a group. So I used to have drinking straws that attached to the bottles that were like extendable so I could put them in my mouth. But now I just wear a hydration pack. So as long as I've got enough fluid in that for the ride that I'm doing, for the race that I'm doing, it can be whatever I want and it's fine. It's just then remembering to drink it when you're in the heat of a race and you're concentrating on other things. But that's fine because there's tech that helps with that. Like I've got my bike computer has a reminder on it that will pop up every 15 minutes. It says drink.
So, drink! Do you add any electrolytes or anything to those fluids, especially when you're training or even on those rides, the electrolytes,
Yeah, so like day to day, I will drink some Mark solution because I have quite a high output ileostomy. So I drink some Mark solution around training and then I use Hydrotabs if I'm actually riding because some Mark's isn't the nicest tasting thing in the world. And when you're then exercising, it can make you feel a bit sick. So I balance those two. And then for racing, I just put double the number of Hydrotabs in a litre that you're supposed to. So it's if it's 2 per litre, we put 4 in. So it's double strength, basically. Of hydration electrolyte tablets with a little bit of sugar so you get the double absorption route of having a little bit of glucose in there. And then instead of drinking a sports drink that's got carbohydrate in it, so they're normally maltodextrin based, instead of drinking that for fuel, because obviously you need to take on carbohydrate to fuel any ride over an hour really, I eat solid foods. So in training I eat jelly babies because they slow down my output because of the gelatin. And 5 jelly babies is 20 grams of carbs, which is the same as a gel or a drink. And they don't have fructose in them, which, again, can speed up output and doesn't settle with some people. But I also, then when I'm racing, because carrying jelly babies in your pocket is not exactly practical in a race, I use a Science in Sport, like a beta fuel chew. It's like basically a bar of 6 chews, and I just cut them in half, so I've got 2 lots of 3. And I eat that, and I eat one of those every 20 minutes, roughly. And again, they're not, they don't have maltodextrin in, so they sit all right with my gut, slow down my output. And then I, before a time trial and before a road race, I eat a handful of jelly babies and a handful of marshmallows because they slow down my output.
We need to get you a Bassett sponsorship.
Yeah, save me loads of money in kilo bags of jelly babies.
Yeah. Get yourself like, you can get like, I think it's sponsored. You can have a sponsored by Coloplast on one side and sponsored by Bassett's Jelly Babies on the other side.
Can you imagine? That'd be amazing.
Coloplast Professional offers a lot of educational material for specialist nurses and healthcare professionals. Visit coloplastprofessional.co.uk to find out more. Was a lot of this trial and error where you had to find things that worked for you, or was it? Were you quite lucky? Did you land on fairly good things straight away? Was there anyone there to advise you? Because obviously your situation is quite rare because you've got the two conditions there. Was it something you, did you have a nutritionist? Do you have access with the parasport? Do you have access to nutritionists?
Yeah, so we have access to nutritionists, and it was a nutritionist and the team doctor at triathlon, because obviously I was in triathlon when I had my stoma, who like helped with developing what I now fuel and eat with and like what we drink. And it was a bit of trial and error and a lot of reading and researching. But between those two, we figured out what works. And now we've figured out what works, we kind of stick to it. We also, it was trial and error. There was some stuff that just didn't work. But hey, you live and learn. The biggest problem I found is finding, like I haven't yet found a recovery drink, like a protein shake for after riding that doesn't really upset my stomach. Like, because I'm lactose intolerant as well, most of them have some form of lactose in, or they're, if they're a vegan protein, they're quite high fiber, which then doesn't work. So I've stuck to my post-race is generally like yogurt, so like lactose-free yogurt. So go for the whole not processed weirdness. But that's just the way it is. It's some things you're never going to find an option.
Yeah. And I say protein drinks do seem to be a sticking point for people with IBD. I know that when I tried to have them at one point, it's because there's quite a lot of artificial sweeteners in a lot of them as well. And those tend to speed up the process a little bit as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I know you spoke then a lot about the importance of that routine. How do you find the routine when you're traveling? Not so much, I can imagine, within Europe because the time difference isn't so great. But I know you said you went to Tokyo with the Paralympics. Obviously, that's a massive time difference. How do you then start to adapt your routine with the catheterization, with the stoma? Because obviously you're asleep when you would be awake and vice versa. How do you manage adapting your routine?
So catheterization is not too bad because I kind of just go, right, just stick to the like 3-4 hour schedule until you get there. And then when you get there, once it's nighttime, you can work out what you would normally do at night and just employ it. I don't find, and if you're asleep or not, it doesn't matter. You're in bed. So just treat it like you'd be in bed. So that's not so bad. Obviously, it's just making sure you've got enough supplies with you, kind of like in hand luggage and stuff on the plane, to cover being on a plane for like 14 hours. Stoma stuff is interesting because I find, and I think I'm a rarity in it from what I've gathered in the stoma community. I find when I fly, my stoma carries on like normal mostly. But then when I get off the plane, whether it's a depressurization thing, my stoma goes mental for like a couple of hours and I can get dehydrated quite easily. And you're already quite dehydrated off a flight normally, even if you try to drink loads, because it's naturally fairly dehydrating. And I can end up a bit more dehydrated at that point and with heavy output for like a couple of hours. And I can only assume it's a pressure change issue because it's reliable. I'll get it on a short haul flight as well. So I don't think it's a long haul thing.
It's just a flying thing.
It's knowing to make sure. Yeah, it's just making sure that I've got enough like extra electrolyte tablets or some Arcs mix with me to kind of counteract that. Sticking to a routine food-wise, like I don't really eat the airplane food. I'll take stuff with me. Like I'll pack food for as long as the journey that's safe foods, because it's just not really worth the gamble, especially when you're then like, oh, well, I'm lactose intolerant as well. And which then leaves you some, with some airlines, the only option is a vegan meal, which is definitely going to be high fiber. And you're going to look at it and be like, well, I can't eat that. And I can't eat that. So it's better to just have stuff with you. From a routine, I change my stoma bag on a schedule anyway. Where if I'm like, I've traveled for more than 24 hours, I'll change it before I've then got a training session, even if I think it's okay. Just because leaks suck and then they ruin your skin. So may as well just prevent before you have a problem rather than risk it. And then from a foreign country nutrition, what you're going to eat perspective, it's just a bit of forward planning. So I travel, wherever I travel, be it Europe or like further afield, I always take with me a little pack up rice cooker.
Ooh.
And a travel kettle. Because with those two things, then you can make pretty much anything you need. You can make eggs, you can make rice, you can make porridge, you can make like I've made a whole meal out of a rice cooker before, because you can steam vegetables as long as you peel them and stuff. So that then if there's not stuff, you've got the option to like just buy the raw ingredients and cook it. So yeah, I always make sure I travel prepared. But that doesn't mean you can't eat out and you can't find things. Like you can. It's just when you've got racing coming up, you have to be a little bit more careful.
Yeah. And like I say, with your lactose intolerance as well, it's almost adding another element in there as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little frustrating because we were just in Italy and obviously pizza, pasta, everything has cheese.
Like, you're just seeing like visions of cheese in front of you.
And ice cream. Like, oh, I want all the things I can't have.
If you could have them, you wouldn't want them anywhere near as much.
True, that is a valid point.
And I remember when I was being diagnosed with my IBD, one of the things I thought I actually had was lactose intolerance. And I had to go through a period of, you know, ruling it out. And it sounds awful, but I was almost relieved that I was still getting all my symptoms, even though I took all the lactose out. Because I was like, thank God I can still eat cheese. As it was, be careful what you wish for. You know, I got IBD, but I can eat cheese. Great. At the time, put it in perspective, Hannah. I mean, but at that point in time, it was like, all I want is cheese, but my tummy's still bad and I still can't have cheese.
Yeah, that sucks.
At that point, putting it in perspective now, I was being a bit of an idiot. But at that point, it felt like the worst thing ever, because I still felt like crap and I was being told I couldn't eat cheese. So,
yeah, fun times.
Well, thank you so much. I literally don't know where the time's gone. We talked to you. You are absolutely amazing. And what we'll say to the listeners is I will update you. Fran has told me I can update you. Not if when she gets her place in the Paralympics. It's going to be when she gets her place in the Paralympics, because I have
we'll see.
Every faith in her. And if she doesn't, I'm going to go and find the selectors and beat them with a stick. Because honestly, this woman is, and I said to our ambassadors, not all heroes wear capes, but my God, you guys should wear capes.
Yeah, well, we just wear skin suits instead.
No, you can have like the bassets rippling along on the cape, maybe. I can see that. That, there we go. That's my vision. Please do it for me, Fran. I want to see you in like a little bassets cape.
No, that's funny.
Thank you for listening. To see more of the wide variety of education we offer, please visit collarplusprofessional.co.uk. See you next time.
Stoma and Continence Conversations is a Vibrant Sound Media production for Collarplus Professional.